Support for the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast comes from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, a family-owned Columbus brewery and restaurant, offering home beer delivery and curbside food pickup Tuesday through Sunday. More at wolfsridgebrewing.com.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 10 Republicans, including Ohio Representative Anthony Gonzalez of Rocky River, on Wednesday broke ranks with their party in voting to impeach President Trump for a historic second time. Two Republicans from the state of Washington, Representative Dan Newhouse, cited the Constitution, and Representative Jamie Herrera Butler extolled the truth to explain their votes.
The president took an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Last week, there was a domestic threat at the door of the Capitol, and he did nothing to stop it.
My vote to impeach our sitting president is not a fear-based decision. I am not choosing a side. I'm choosing truth. It's the only way to defeat fear.
Joining us is political journalist Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. We have a link to that on our website. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Ann. What a week.
You know, I think people think that we, like, plan when you're going to be on, but it's just...
Well, but if I was on last week, we would have talking about the amazing Georgia results, the incendiary march to the Capitol and the violence that was committed there and the counting the electoral votes, which was never supposed to be anything other than perfunctory. So
I don't think we've ever talked about that before.
It's just an amazing story behind it.
Yeah, it really is. You know, the New York Times in a subhead today said, called it a small but significant number of Republicans who joined the Democrats in voting for impeachment. And I'm wondering, if it's small, why is it significant? And those 10 votes.
That's a great question. I mean, to me, when you think of, like, you know, 197 House Republicans voted against impeachment, 10 voted for, you say, well, this is hardly bipartisan, getting just 10 Republicans, but it's the most in any impeachment. I mean, not that we have a long history of presidential impeachments, but never before have 10 representatives of the president's own party voting to impeach. That was true about Andrew Johnson. That was true about Bill Clinton. And while Richard Nixon never went to the full House, I mean, you didn't have 10 Republicans who were supporting impeachment, although you had a bunch on the House Judiciary Committee. So the fact is, no, 10 is hardly a lot, but you had the number three Republican, Liz Cheney of Wyoming, which was a major vote.
Yeah.
Even Kevin McCarthy, who has defended President Trump through and through, said, look, this is disgraceful. He bears a large part of the blame. So 10 out of 197 is not a big deal, but historically it is.
The Senate still has to vote to convict. That won't happen now until after inauguration. It's going to be a new Senate by then, right?
That's right. I mean, I'm not sure exactly when the date is. It may be January 22nd, but the two Georgia Democrats, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, will be sworn in. And that, along with Kamala Harris, tie-breaking vote, will give the Democrats the Senate. So the earliest that could be is like January 20th, 21st. And Mitch McConnell said, look, there's no way the Senate is going to act on the impeachment before then. So basically, this will be the Democrats in charge of impeachment in the Senate. And look, are you going to get 17 Republicans? Very unlikely. You only got 10 in the House. But clearly there are a bunch of Republicans and perhaps Mitch McConnell himself who would love the follow-up vote. It's one thing to, you know, to remove him from office. That did not happen with Andrew Johnson or Bill Clinton or Donald Trump, obviously, in the first time. But then there would be another vote that would just needs a majority that bars him, the president, Donald Trump, from ever running from office for office again. And there are a lot of Republicans like Mitch McConnell who would love to rid the party of the stain of Donald Trump, even though, in fairness, he has enabled him for the past 4 years.
Exactly. When you watch Mitch McConnell talk about this, and of course, we never really see Mitch McConnell talk that much, but when they were speaking after the insurrection after they reconvened later that evening last week. Mitch McConnell was quite eloquent in his criticism.
See, here's my problem with Mitch McConnell. Yes, he was. When the Congress came back, yes, he did blame the president and thought it was disgraceful what happened. But then in the next breath, he said, you know, the Democrats started this in 2005 when Barbara Boxer and Stephanie Tubb Jones of Ohio voted to contest the electoral vote count of Ohio because there were infractions and voting problems that weren't addressed. And then Mitch McConnell blamed the press for ignoring what the Democrats did in 2005, but focusing on what the Republicans did. That is so apples and oranges. I mean, for one thing, John Kerry conceded early. Barbara Boxer was not trying to overturn the election. Whereas all those Republicans who voted against certifying Biden's win wanted to overturn the election because Donald Trump suggested they do that. So it's apples and oranges. I don't give Mitch McConnell as much credit as many people do. But having said that, he did go further than he's ever gone before in addressing the blame of Donald Trump.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Ken Rudin is with us today, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ken, I have to know, what were your thoughts last week when I tuned in uncharacteristically, turned on the TV at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to watch the debate and the vote on the electoral count, because that was going to be enough news for me for the day. And then the U.S. Capitol was breached by the rioters, and all hell broke loose. So what were your thoughts at the time?
It was horrifying. And you know something, those thoughts have not gone away. This was clearly an effort to subvert democracy, to subvert the will of the people and upend an election that was clearly won by Joe Biden, won by 7 million votes and a sizable 306 to 232 electoral college majority. The fact that doesn't work anymore. Basically, Donald Trump has said from the beginning, even before the election was over, was taken, that either I win or it's fixed. And there are a lot of Republicans who fell in line like that. So that's why I understand why Mitch McConnell would probably privately love for Donald Trump and the stain of the insurrection to be removed from the Republican Party. Because what Trump has done is, one, he's created a cult that most of the Republicans support, but there is a stain on the party in the fact that they're so willing to overturn an election because their cult leader said it was stolen from him. And that is just disheartening and frightening.
Of those 10 that voted to Republicans who voted to impeach yesterday, some interesting characters came into relief. People maybe we wouldn't have heard about before. The two representatives from Washington, the guy from Grand Rapids, Michigan, the congressman from Jerry Ford's old district, to wit.
Right. More recently, it was Justin Amash's district. And Justin Amash was a Republican who quit the Republican Party to become an independent, later became a libertarian because of his anger towards President Trump's conduct. I mean, I had to look up Anthony Gonzalez of Ohio. I wanted to see what district he was from because I know nothing about him except that he's a recent member of Congress. But the fact that you had Liz Cheney, the fact that you had Adam Kinzinger, the moderate Republican from Illinois, who's long been a Trump critic, I mean, those weren't surprising, but the other names, my goodness, Tom Rice of South Carolina, he's been a loyal, steadfast Trump supporter from day one. But apparently for those 10, and again, it surprises me that the number wasn't larger, but for those 10, enough is enough.
Yeah, they were predicting maybe as many as 20.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I know that when Mitt Romney voted for conviction in the Senate, suddenly it became a bipartisan vote for a conviction. I mean, that's, you know, the fact is 197 stayed with the president, with despite the fact that he was willing to subvert democracy and support insurrection. And yet you had an overwhelming majority of the Republican Party still sticking with this president. So, you know, kudos to the 10, but my goodness, that's not something to be proud of.
Let's see, Charles in London, you're on the air. Hi, oops, sorry. Matt in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I just wonder what Ken thinks about now that Congress has had people with weapons and Confederate flags and flex cuffs who mounted a noose out on the West Front, whether they're ready to pass an anti-lynching law.
Hmm. Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, it's not only Confederate flags. There was one person who was later arrested who was wearing a Camp Auschwitz T-shirt.
Right. There were a couple of them, yeah.
Another person was wearing a T-shirt that said 6 million were not enough. I mean, that's, you know, for all the talk about how good friend Donald Trump is to Israel and the Jews, I mean, that just went beyond the pale. So, you know, Trump is going to be gone in less than 10 days. It's kind of shocking, but he'll be gone in 6 days. I said less than 10 days, it'll be less than a week. Mm-hmm. But Trumpism remains, the hate remains, the extremism remains. And there's a lot of people worried not only about what might happen at the Biden inaugural, about whether there'll be outbursts of violence and marches and things like that, but what may happen at state capitals when people may flood, you know, Columbus mm-hmm. and Lansing and elsewhere to spread this insurrection. So an anti-lynching law is interesting. I mean, of course, Joe Biden has a lot on his plate, not the least of which is that 3,000 or 4,000 Americans are dying every day from the COVID virus, from COVID, nothing that Donald Trump seems to be concerned with. I mean, it's fascinating. He wants to be president in the worst way, but he doesn't want to do the job a president does. And that would be leading them out of this horrific pandemic. But that's too, you know, governing seems to be too much of a burden for Donald Trump.
Charles in London, you're on the air. Hi, Charles.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about what it kind of feeds into what Ken was saying earlier. We're all used to the falsely equivalent whataboutisms as a tactic. But what's going on also, and I'm afraid that the media helps out, is something I want to call a false classificationism. And for example, you often hear, well, masks are a partisan issue. They're not. Just because a lot of Republicans or Trump supporters don't wear masks, that don't make them a political or partisan issue, because I've never heard of a Democrat that says they wear a mask because they are a Democrat or whatever. And so what happens is we end up classifying things as partisan and political that shouldn't be. Climate change, scientific, generational consensus is not a partisan or political issue. It is reality. Accepting the economic fact that paying a person a living wage is good for economy is not a partisan issue. Okay. And I came to this conclusion. Go ahead.
No, I hear what you're saying. Go ahead, Joe.
It's fair to say that there is a partisan divide on these issues, but it's not fair to categorize them as partisan or political issues. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Charles. I want to say I get the distinction.
Ohio Correctional Facility.
Okay. I just want to hear what Ken Rudin has to say about that. I think it's an interesting distinction.
That's another credit, Ann Fisher, to your audience, because Charles is exactly right on. The fact that masks became a partisan issue is frightening, but not surprising when you had a president who said that really wasn't much of a virus to begin with. It was not much worse than a cold. You know, take some Clorox and you'll feel better. It's not much more than the flu. And so Republicans, because Trump wouldn't wear a mask, therefore others wouldn't wear a mask. I mean, Oklahoma, for goodness sakes, is one of the, I think it's the only state in the country that does not have a mandatory mask law in some way or form. And they're now the third largest spreader and infectious disease, you know, infection rate of the virus because of politics. And just, you know, Charles is right. Look, the fact that I wear a seatbelt is not because I'm a Democrat or Republican. I want to stay safe. And the same reason is why I wear a mask, is to stay safe. And the fact that that's become a political issue is just, I mean, disheartening is not even the right word. It's criminal because so many people have died.
We will continue our conversation with political journalist Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast comes from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, a family-owned Columbus brewery and restaurant, offering home beer delivery and curbside food pickup Tuesday through Sunday. More at wolfsridgebrewing.com.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In a video posted Wednesday on the White House Twitter account, President Trump said that the rioters who breached the U.S. Capitol last week were not reflecting his values. He ignored the historic impeachment vote against him just hours earlier, and he also ignored his lie that he had won the election, a falsity that helped whip up the rioters in the first place. Trump instead talked about a safe transition to the next administration.
No true supporter of mine could ever endorse political violence. No true supporter of mine could ever disrespect law enforcement or our great American flag. No true supporter of mine could ever threaten or harass their fellow Americans. If you do any of these things, you are not supporting our movement, you are attacking it, and you are attacking our country. We cannot tolerate it.
Still with us is political journalist Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website. In his 5-minute video, the president struck a much different tone from what we heard. He was obviously very scripted. News reports say that there was quite a bit of arm twisting. Ken, I mean, what do you make of what he said? He didn't really say anything much.
Well, it's too little too late, of course. I mean, more importantly, this is after he was impeached for the second time. I think he's had three marriages, but only two impeachments. It's getting clear. Those numbers are starting to confuse me. But here's the thing, though. Remember last Wednesday during that awful, horrific spat of violence at the Capitol, where five people were killed and they just broke through. And then they're screaming, hang Mike Pence. Yeah. And where's Nancy? I mean, God knows what could have happened. You always think of that plane that went down on 9/11 in Pennsylvania, what its goal was, where it could have taken it. And I always think of, the violence that happened. But look, last Wednesday, Trump appealed to his supporters and say, we love you, go home, we love you, and we're proud of you, or whatever. I mean, look, the fact that he released a video, I'm surprised he didn't do it on Twitter. Oh, he's not on Twitter. Oh, that's no wonder my days are much nicer and more relaxed.
But you don't have to wake up the first thing in the morning to see what he just said overnight.
Well, see, that's what used to drive me crazy. People would say, did you see what Trump just put on Twitter? And then I'd spend the rest of my day just shaking my head and crying. But so it was too little too late. It meant nothing. And the fact is, he has yet to acknowledge, and he won't acknowledge any responsibility for what happened last Wednesday at the Capitol. And I think that's one of the arguments for impeachment. I mean, I was kind of torn of the fact about an impeachment with only a week to go. Why bother? But there has to be consequences for inciting a riot and supporting an insurrection that meant to subvert democracy. So again, the video, I didn't think much of it. I don't give him any credit for anything, because the fact is, when it mattered, he was not there to help prevent the violence and protect democracy.
Timothy in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Timothy.
Hey, Ann, you're awesome. I listen every day. I love your show.
Thank you.
So my question is, obviously Trump, but not just these outspoken knuckleheads like Hawley and Cruz, and to a lesser extent Gates and our own Jim Jordan, but all these people who maybe even aren't speaking up, these Republicans who are, you know, kind of tacitly approving what he's doing by not saying anything, what's to expect they won't do the same thing if they get in a position of even more power than they already have? I mean, doesn't there need to be a precedent set that, you know, you cannot lie about the fundamental thing that makes us a democracy, which is a fair and free election? I mean, it seems like there should be a real solid line drawn in the sand for everybody.
Well, you know, Timothy, I appreciate the question, but I'm not sure. I mean, if we, you know, we penalized every member of Congress who lied, we'd have nobody left. I mean, more or less. But the fact is, it went beyond lying. It went beyond, look, Trump could say, I didn't win the election. That's one thing. But calling the Secretary of State in Georgia and demanding he find 11,000 votes to overturn the election, that is just sedition. I don't know what it is, but it certainly it's undemocratic and it's undermining the Constitution. So there are a lot of members of Congress. Before we worry about the silent ones, like the, you know, beyond the Ted Cruz's and the Josh Hawley's, I'm nervous about the Lauren Boberts and the Marjorie Taylor Greens, you know, Boebert from Colorado, Green, and Taylor Green from Georgia, who support QAnon, who Boebert insists on wearing a gun to the Capitol, who basically spends their whole day denouncing Hunter Biden and Hillary Clinton as if that mattered, and trying to do this false equivalency of what Nancy Pelosi may have said or what George Soros may have said to the President of the United States. The Republican Party is going to have to come to terms with what the future of it is. You know, we always talk about the Democratic Party. Does Bernie Sanders and the left wing pull Biden, or is it more like Tim Ryan and the centrists moving into the center? But the Republican Party, my goodness, when you have an overwhelming majority still favorable to Donald Trump, that polls show that 70% of Republican Party still feel that he's their president and the rightfully elected president, Republican Party is going to have to come to terms with it. And I don't know where they start. Perhaps McConnell needs a bigger speech. Perhaps we need more from Kevin McCarthy. But I question whether they have the backbone to do it. And plus the fact, we always think of, you know, all the Republicans that defended him for all those years, Brian Kemp of Georgia, even Mike DeWine. When Mike DeWine said, yes, Joe Biden won the election, immediately Donald Trump said, okay, Mike DeWine, I'm going to support a challenger to you in the 2022 primaries. So you, if you're a Republican, you take on Donald Trump at your own political peril, and that is so frightening.
Timothy, thanks a lot for listening, and thanks for the call. Margaret in Marysville, you're on the air with Ken Rutan. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I just want to say that I think that what I did at 126 last week is I went to my Board of Elections and I declared my independence. I've been a Republican, and I basically decided I'm done. This is it. Last straw. So I felt my family has been here for hundreds of years. We were in the Revolutionary War. No, that's it. I saw one man's delusions that led us to fight our own democracy. Way too much, way too far. I am no longer a member of the Republican Party, and I just declared my independence last week. So there we go. That's what we the people can do.
Margaret, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Ken Rutan.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that call, too, because I know of a lot of Republicans who have also quit the party. But at the same time, if there is a good segment of the Republican Party that wants to make a change, that wants to move it away from Trumpism, even if Trump won't be around, Trumpism is still around. If they want to change the party from within, I don't know if quitting the party is the right thing. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I applaud Margaret because I know of so many people who are so disgusted with what happened that they can't call themselves Republican anymore. But if, just like, you know, the new Republican Party broke away from the Whigs in the late 1850s, maybe there's going to be a new Republican Party of Kasich and DeWine and Brian Kemp and and Adam Kissinger and Liz Cheney. I mean, I don't know.
And by the way, these are not raging moderates. These are conservatives you're talking about.
These are conservatives, right, exactly.
These are classic Republicans.
It's not that the party's gone too far to the right. It's just that it's hitched its wagon to somebody who is backing insurrection against his own government.
Margaret, thanks a lot for that call. Thanks for listening. Tristan in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Tristan.
Hey, thank you for taking my my call.
Sure.
My question is now that the men and women of Congress have had to hide, run, evade, have just had a taste of what it must have been like to be the children at Sandy Hook and the children at Stoneman Douglas, do you think that we will finally be able to see some reform that can hopefully bring an end to the school shootings and the active shooting training that our children are having to go through?
Yeah, that
as a kid growing up in the 80s, the only training I ever went through was either hurricane, tornado, or earthquake training. Now the thought that I've got a toddler that's going to eventually have to go through active school shooting, that's unsettling.
That actually came up a lot. In the days since the breach of the U.S. Capitol. Ken?
You know, when Tristan brought up Sandy Hook, I mean, whenever I hear those words, I still have this shiver inside, and I always think that if Congress didn't pass laws after the slaughter of children in an elementary school, if Congress didn't pass laws about guns after the slaughter of black parishioners in Charleston, South Carolina. You know, I don't know what's going to change this, but it is interesting. You know, I'm old enough to remember hiding under my desk in the 1950s because of fear of a nuclear war, and I guess it must have worked because I wasn't killed in a nuclear war, probably because I hid behind my desk. But the point is the fact is, and this is what I liked about Tristan's question, the fact that so many lawmakers did exactly what school children, for God's sakes, school children are going through now, maybe somehow they'll wake up and realize that things need to be changed. But again, remember after Gabby Giffords was shot in Arizona, Democrats and Republicans sat with each other on the floor of the House, trying to come together on some kind of meaningful dealings with such violence and the scourge of guns. And then a week later, everybody forgot about it. So ultimately, I think nothing seems to affect this country. No stain seems to drive this country, or at least the lawmakers, Congress, to make any meaningful changes.
Tristan, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guest is Ken Rudin, political journalist. And you can we'll have a link to Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. And I have some emails. One is from Bob. He says, what does Ken think about allegations that Mo Brooks and other GOP Congress people may have provided pre-riot tours to help rioters pick their targets?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. I didn't know about this until yesterday, but apparently investigators are, the FBI is looking into the fact that some members of Congress the day before the attack on the Hill gave tours of some of the same people who did the violence. And so they could scout out where is Nancy Pelosi's office, where are other things like that. That to me is certainly liable for a prosecution, no question.
And then from James, an email says, from a purely political point of view, the only people who will benefit from Trump not running again will be the Republicans. If the Democrats let him run, they can stand back and watch the Republican infighting from the sidelines. Just a thought. The point being that if he is indeed impeached and convicted in the Senate of that, he would not be able to run for public office again.
Well, not convicted. There'd have to be a separate vote about barring him.
I keep forgetting that.
But one would have thought after the first impeachment, that he was damaged goods, that he was, finished. The fact that, 300,000 Americans were dying of COVID, you think that a president who just didn't do his job would be subject to a landslide defeat in 2020, and yet it was a very reliably, I mean, a marginally close election. So don't underestimate Trump. I mean, I don't think I remember Democrats and Republicans also saying, let Trump run in 2016 because he'll be, you know, destroyed at the polls, and he wasn't. So be careful what you wish for. I don't think either party is looking forward to a Donald Trump returning. Of course, he'll be, 78 years old, and nobody's ever been that old elected president since Joe Biden.
Let's see. let's see. Fred in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Fred.
Hi. So there's going to be a second impeachment trial. This time the Democrats will be in charge. Do you think Dershowitz and the others are going to make the same arguments they made to defend the president before, such as not calling witnesses and not having evidence? Or do you think they're going to flip-flop and demand evidence and demand witnesses?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, look, the Republicans ran the show in the first impeachment trial, Senate trial, and that's why, John Bolton and others who may have had evidence, there was no indication that the Republicans wanted to call for witnesses because they knew he wouldn't be convicted. Dershowitz and Giuliani and all those people who have linked their future to Donald Trump, I don't know what they're going to do, But I worry more about Joe Biden. I mean, this trial could begin almost the beginning of Joe Biden's presidency. And, there's not going to be inaugural balls. There's not going to be, the Sean Spicer, the largest crowd in the history of inauguration yeah. on the Mall. But one would think, and I think Joe Biden is handling this the right way, trying to ignore it as much as he can. But there are so many problems in this country. I'm getting off a little bit off Fred's question about what Dershowitz is planning to do. But my goodness, the last thing that Joe Biden wants to do is be consumed by an impeachment trial when there's just raging a virus that are claiming so many more lives every day.
Fred, thanks a lot for that call. We will get to more calls. We'll get to some emails and continue our conversation with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. And today is the day that we're talking to Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We're talking about the historic vote by the U.S. House of Representatives yesterday to impeach President Donald Trump for a second time. Senate will take up the question of conviction, but not before Joe Biden is inaugurated next week. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ken Rudin, I'm trying to figure out what the calculus is for Joe Biden going forward. They're saying that they may wait for 100 days, that first symbolic 100 days of an administration. But it's still going to be simmering on the back burner, even if they do go to that extent to wait 100 days before the Senate takes up the impeachment issue. And you made the salient point that there aren't going to be inaugural balls. There isn't going to be a big speech. I just read the New York Times is reporting that the entire National Mall will be closed for Inauguration Day. I think probably maybe the enduring visual of the day will be National Guard troops surrounding the Capitol on a day that's usually one, as you mentioned earlier, Sean Spicer was bragging about how many people were at the Trump inaugural. What is this? These things, they matter, don't they? Ken Rudin, where...
just as the history books will talk about Donald Trump and all the things he's done, just the thought of Joe Biden coming into office with no fanfare, with no real celebration, at least by the public. I mean, I'm just listening to that All Things Considered promo for tonight's show, and it just occurred to me that, I mean, the fact that there are more troops in Washington, D.C. right now than there are in Afghanistan is a frightening reminder of what's become of this country and what's become of the anger and disillusionment in this country. But the fact is, I can't think of another president, maybe not since FDR taking over in March of 1933, a president who's come into with so many problems, with so much anger and disillusionment, and not to mention what FDR had to deal with the Depression. But Joe Biden has so much on his plate. The fact is that, as everybody says, this virus is going to get worse before it gets better. There's still problems with getting the vaccine out. And thousands are dying, 3,000-4,000 are dying every day. That has nothing to do with impeachment and conviction trial of Donald Trump. I think you can't wait 100 days. I think you want to get it over with as fast as possible. If you convict him, you convict him. If you don't, you don't. But Joe Biden can't wait around and schedule things. Things are just going to have to happen sooner than later, because it can't. I don't think the country could stand this kind of waiting on edge with everything that's going on.
Let's see. Riley in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Riley.
Hi, Ann. Thanks so much for taking my question.
You're welcome.
I'm taking you back to the history books here. I've been a Republican for a good long time, and I never cease to be shocked at what has happened over the last 4 years. And there's no way that Trump just created this movement out of nowhere in 4 years alone. Can you guys help me understand how we got here? You know, how did this movement build, and how did we really come to this place?
That's a great question. I mean, I heard in the promo that I'm going to be on the show tomorrow, so I can continue this tomorrow. No, I'm not going to be on tomorrow. But, you know, I just remember, look, for the longest time, when the Republicans were in the minority in the House, and they were led by my good friend, who I miss very much, Bob Michael of Illinois, but Republicans were willing to go along to get along. They accepted their minority status. Along comes Newt Gingrich in the revolution of 1994, and he says, this can't stand. We can't live like this. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to be tough. We're going to be cruel if we have to. We're going to win. And a lot of Republicans went along with the Newt Gingrich stuff. So you know, there are so many people who came out of the closet, meaning racism and militarism, and Gingrich helped that along. And then came the Tea Party in 2009 in the aftermath of Barack Obama's election. And they also moved the party further and further to the right. People forget that 6 years ago, Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, among others, were challenged by the right wing of their party because they were insufficiently conservative. So because the party was moving so far to the right, many of its office holders like McConnell, like Lindsey Graham, like other erstwhile moderates. I mean, Kelly Loeffler, my goodness, the Republican senator in Georgia who lost, she was a moderate Romney Republican, but she realized, you know, fix her star with Donald Trump, stay with it. So Donald Trump didn't create this party, but he enabled it and encouraged it. And we've never had a president to do what he's done. And while, look, they lost the House, they lost the Senate, they lost the presidency, there are a lot of Republicans who feel that they got so much done with all the judges and all that stuff that Trump was a great president and great for the cause. It's confounding.
Riley, thanks a lot for that call. Let's see. Here's another point of view from a Republican. Jessica, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call, Anne, and thanks for being here, Ken. I just wanted to, it really echoes with what Ken is saying and reinforce, you know, since the Tea Party and since what he was talking about with Newt Gingrich, the Republican Party has really stopped being a party of small government, and they have become a party against government. It's clear, especially with some of these newer representatives who are just being sworn in, but even with people who came on with the Tea Party movement, they're not here to govern. They are here to prevent government from functioning, to defund as many programs as possible, and to enrich themselves. And until that type of rotten morals in our public leadership and in our public service is gone, and until people are serving the public and running for office because of that, I don't know how the Republican Party can save itself.
Hmm. Ken Rudin.
Oh, I like that question a lot, Jessica. And the reason I like it so much is because when I think of Newt Gingrich in the early days of Newt Gingrich, he was one of the backbenchers who would throw bombs from the back. And it was easy to do that when you weren't in power. But once you take power, as Jessica pointed out, you can't be against government if you are the government. You can't stop programs and dismantle the government if you're part of the government. So it's one thing to be in the opposition and throw bombs and have complaints. But the purpose of running for election and serving in government is to govern. And we've had a president, Donald Trump, and many members of Congress who are still anti-government, opposed to government functioning. And, you know, just like if the government tells you to wear a mask, forget it. If the government says that this is a serious epidemic, we don't believe you. And so this is what they've wrought. This is what's happened to us. And again, from an earlier call, I mean, what the future of the Republican Party is, I don't know if it continues as a Trumpist party, because, you know, Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and others are running for president already in 2024. They're going to have to come to terms. Look, the Republican Party came to terms after Barry Goldwater was defeated in 1964. Do you go further to the right or do you move back to the center? Republicans are going to have to make a decision whether this anti-government carnage is going to continue and what damage it does to the country.
Jessica, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Greg in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Ann. My question, which I would like Ken to address, is kind of two-part. First, it's my opinion that a lot of politicians vote not out of a sense of duty or a sense of ethics, but they vote to stay in power, you know, stay in office or advance, their careers like a Josh Hawley. And I'm wondering what Ken thinks of term limits, how that would affect this dynamic. Like, for instance, McConnell, seven terms in the Senate. For instance, this is the first part of the question. The second part of the question would be, it's a catch-22 because the very people who need to have these term limits to get them to vote out of a sense of duty rather than to further their political careers, they're the people in charge of setting the term limit, and they don't want to do that.
Well, of course,
what do you think about that, Ken?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Greg, I've thought about term limits for a long time. That's one of the few things I really have a strong opinion on, and I'm against term limits. I mean, yes, Mitch McConnell has been around forever. He was elected in 1984, but 10 years earlier, Patrick Leahy of Vermont was elected. He's been around since 74, and I don't hear any proponents of term limits saying Pat Leahy must go. Well, look, I don't like what some of these members have done, but we've seen in both Republican years like 2010 and 2014 and Democratic years like 2006, 2008, that if there's an anger, the party in power loses and incumbents lose. So I think I'd rather leave it to the voters. I don't think a Speaker of the House, for example, should be there for only two terms. I think you need to have some kind of understanding of government. You have to, and otherwise the staffers will be running the show because the staffers will be there for 30 years.
And then there's the lobbyists too. We have term limits in Ohio, and one of the big promises of that was going to be that it would be more diverse, that more women would run for office, blah, 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 blah. It is the least diverse. There are fewer women than there were back when I was covering the General Assembly 100 years ago. I'm not sure what the promise of term limits held anymore, but Ohio has term limits for the Ohio General Assembly, so I guess you can just look at that. And it has not stopped people from using public office as something to put on their resume. They know going in. And then I still know people in the General Assembly, and I haven't covered it in 20 years, because of the way they can keep going back and forth between the House and the Senate. So
I mean, you're still covering Frank Lausche, right? No, but here's the thing, though. I mean, I think a bigger thing, more so than term limits, is gerrymandering. I think the fact that a party will keep itself in power, and this is not just against the Republicans, Democrats do it too when they're in power, the fact that they draw the lines to keep themselves safe from challenge, that's the part I don't like. I think it should be an independent commission or something like that, but to keep fairness, at least, in elections.
Greg, thanks a lot for that call. Let's see. We have an email from Brad, who's in Columbus. He says, I think at this point, Congress is just providing laugh-out-loud moments when McCarthy steps to the microphone and calls for unity and things like that. When other Republicans do the same, when Twitter feeds from the week before reveal nasty and snarky comments about liberals or the left, now we need to unify. That's bordering on farce. I hope that somehow these people will be brought up to the charges for helping to incite the insurrection. I want to ask you, Ken.
I like that. I like that note, by the way. I like that from Brad.
Very pithy. It was a very long note. I took out what we thought were the most germane pieces of that.
But just before you answer your question, I'll say this quickly. The fact is, all these Republicans who stood up yesterday and said impeachment is not good because we need to unify the country. Where were these Republicans when Donald Trump was saying the election is stolen, the election is run by George Soros and Venezuela and Fidel Castro and Dag Hammarskjöld and Frank Lausche? I mean, they came up with such concoctions of lies. That's the part that just really bugs me the most. Not so much. I mean, to call for unity now, it just doesn't work for me.
Ken, the president, you know, posted that 5-minute video through the White House Twitter account on Wednesday, disavowing any connection with the rioters at the U.S. Capitol. However, in connection with that, you can draw a straight line from what happened last Wednesday to what FBI reports have said could happen this weekend at the 50 state capitals and in Washington. Do you think that if there is violence, if there is problems, if there are problems in Columbus and other state capitals around this country, that could change the dynamic in the Senate as it regards impeachment?
You know, it could be. I mean, the fact is, what happened Wednesday certainly encouraged those 10 Republicans to vote for impeachment, encouraged the Kevin McCarthys and the Mitch McConnells of the world to criticize it. But yes, it could. If what Donald Trump has given a green light to these extremist groups that, you know, in the past would have been laughed out of business, but now they're marching and they feel they got marching orders from the president. It could. I mean, again, I don't see. Look, you only got 10 in the House. To get 17 Republicans to vote for conviction in the Senate is a long stretch. But again, if the violence continues, if it escalates on the road to the inauguration, who knows? I mean, remember Susan Collins, after she voted to acquit President Trump, she said, look, he's learned a lesson. He's gotten worse since impeachment. My goodness, what if he were reelected in November? What if there was nothing holding him back for a second term? My goodness, you think of consequential elections. I think 2020 was perhaps more consequential than we'll ever know.
One more call before we go. Jeff in Johnstown, you're on the air. We're running out of time, Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Okay. Oh, lost the other call, too. So, Ken, what's ahead? I mean, we got this weekend to get through. What are you looking for coming up? I mean, it's going to be a weird inauguration, I guess.
You know something, when you think of it, though, there are very few inaugurations that we remember. You remember the lofty terms of President Kennedy in 1961, and that was memorable. But for the moment, I remember the doom and gloom inauguration speech from Donald Trump. But for the most part, we don't remember it. But I think it's the country that needs refreshing. It's the country that needs to be inaugurated, perhaps free from the chaos of the past 4 years. I don't think of Joe Biden as a very strong, fearless, strong leader, but he's going to have to dig deep inside him to pull this country together, and that's a tough task.
And an email from Steve says, a recent story suggested Jim Jordan, Ohio rep, is more important in the House than Kevin McCarthy. Your thoughts?
No, he'd like to think so. But I mean, there is a wing of the party that loves Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and all those people. But Kevin McCarthy has a tougher battle even than what Paul Ryan had and what Boehner had, is because it's a tough thing to try to unite a party in the aftermath of a president that was larger than life.
All right, Ken Rudin, that's it. Until next time, and who knows what'll happen between now and then.
We don't make this stuff up. We just report it.
Just report it. That's Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org. All thanks to the producers, Aaron Esmont and Matt Rand, our assistant producer, Bobby Gerberick, video production by Nick Payne, board operation by Scott Good. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me on Twitter too at Ann Fisher WOSU. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.